Okay, Jed, we are set and ready to roll. This is the NIBIDS Power Hour. It's a joy and delight to be here together with you and all of those that are joining us for our call today. We're going to be talking about success in publishing, specifically 7 success strategies. We're also going to be giving you an overview of what we're seeing in the publishing world and in the economy as well. Jed, do you want to get started and say hello to the group, an introduction, and then I'll settle in. I'll do a brief introduction, and we'll just talk about how we're going to field questions and so forth. Okay? So how about an overview about from MediaBids as we get rolling here today?
Sure. My name is Jed Gould. I'm the president of MediaBids. We are a web-based company, essentially, that buys and sells newspaper and magazine advertising. We're a good way to reach out and reach advertisers that you may not otherwise be reaching. If you have any questions about MediaBids, you're always welcome to call us or email us. We can be happy to tell you more. And I also want to just thank Ernest, who does a great job with these teleseminars. He really is the one with the vast majority of the knowledge. So, it always amazes me how he's able to, how much he knows about the publishing industry.
Well, thank you, Jed. It's always a pleasure, and what a delight working with you and your team at MediaBids. I so appreciate the responsiveness, the coordination, the way we're able to send out invitations to those who work with MediaBids, and of course those who work with Power Hour. It's really a delight, and thank you. This is concluding 3-4 years that we've been rolling along. Next year we'll begin our 4th, and I don't think we've covered any topic twice. There's so much about publishing and advertising sales, and actually today talking about distribution, circulation, production, printing. We've never gone down some of those paths. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's really great. So my name is Ernest Orienti. Many know me just as Coach or the Coach. I coach leading publishing companies and their teams. I work with about 600 companies around the world in 8 time zones entirely by phone, by conference call like we're meeting here, and then by email in between our calls. My focus is on helping you compete better, drive more revenue, sell more pages, earn more, have more fun. We provide coaching services. We do executive recruiting. Craig is my VP of recruiting and handles all of that. We provide investment banking services. We help our publishing clients buy and sell publications. And so really a very full service, kind of, from cradle to grave, so to speak, from the beginning of the life of a launch, a startup, a turnaround, any of those things, we help our clients succeed. So we're going to talk today about 7 success strategies. There's 7 key points we're going to cover. During the course of this call, there's lots to cover. For those of you that have been on our calls, and we know many of you have been on all of our calls, or many or most, please know that we typically have 3 specific categories, and we go very deep in those. Today we have 7. So we're going to be in and out of each of these points probably in the span of about 6 or 8 minutes. Now, there's 2 ways you can engage with us. Number one, you can send an email to ernest@powerhour.com or just hit reply to the confirmation that you got you here that had all the call-in information. Or you can also, at the top of the hour, we're going to open the lines at the end of the formal program for about 10 or 15 minutes, and we'll probably field 3, 4, 5 questions right there, and you can always follow up with us afterward, okay? So, Jed, let's dive right in. We've got a lot of ground to cover. I have just a couple of minutes after the top of the hour here. So, Jed, we wanted to talk a little about the state of publishing in our current economy. No doubt, we all know economically that we're in a pretty rough spot. The world is watching us. We are watching ourselves. I was just working with a group up in Canada both earlier today and also late yesterday talking about, how closely they're watching, the U.S. economy as well. What are some of the broad strokes that you're seeing? And then I'm going to read a couple of things from some research about advertising in a tough economy.
Yeah, one of the things that we're seeing here just with our customers is that, a lot of the ways in which they're advertising are changing. Rather than advertising with a brand mentality, we're seeing a lot more switch to direct response, where companies are trying to sort of appeal to directly to sort of what people need as opposed to what they want. That's probably been the most dramatic change so far. the and from a publication point of view, I mean, there definitely appears to be some concern as we talk to publications that aren't seeing the holidays materialize the way they had hoped. But I think we certainly have not seen the spigot turn off entirely for 2009, and it doesn't it doesn't appear like it does seem to be some shift in sort of emphasis, but not necessarily we don't see a lot of people just pulling out of print entirely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is Ernest Jett in response, where we've seen a much stronger reaction on the TV, billboard, radio. There, we have not seen that in the print side. But even if your particular marketplace or particular sector or the particular readers or niches that you serve is off by 10%, even 25%, you still pause and go, huh, so instead of 10 leads, let's see, I might get 7 or 8, but the spigot is not turned off. And that's the most important part for all of you to recognize as we're looking at the state of the economy and the challenges that we're in. But you have to recognize that your advertisers still want a piece of what is out there. So even if there's a downturn, they still have to continue advertising. And that really ties into something that I'm going to read here. And if one of you will just send a quick email and just remind me in the follow-up to this meeting today, I will send this article. And the article is related to how to convince advertisers to keep advertising in a down economy. And this is something that was shared by one of our clients. And actually, I got it four or five different ways. It's pretty interesting. But I just want to read a couple of things. There was research that was done in this article that tracked 200 companies through the challenges and the recession from 1923. And what they showed was that the biggest sales increases throughout the period were rung by companies that advertised the most. When they correlated the figures with sales and profit trends before, during, and after the recessions of 49, 54, 58, and 61, they found that almost without exception, sales and profits dropped off at companies that cut back at advertising. Their study also revealed that after the recessions ended, those companies continued to lag behind the ones that maintained their advertising. So it's very interesting. I'm going to continue to read two more portions. The finding of six more recession studies to date by the group present formidable evidence that cutting advertising in times of economic downturn can result in both immediate and long-term negative impact on sales and profit. So they were researching, for example, Jed, brands like Jiffy peanut butter and Kraft salad dressing, and how they increased their advertising and sales growth grew after the 91 recession by 57 and 70% respectfully. They also looked at Coors Light and Bud Light, how they increased and saw their revenue jump by 15 and 16%. They also looked at Pizza Hut. Sales rose by 61%, Taco Bell by 40% thanks to strong advertising, while reducing McDonald's sales by 28%. Good. Now, I know that was a lot for all of you to process and think through. I'll send it as an email. Again, if one of you will just ping me a note, I'll tuck that in as part of our follow-up. But, Jeff, this is like really compelling factual data that talks about global brands, no doubt. I mean, how does this impact, Mary's Dry Cleaners or Bob's Automotive? Well, you have to go look at the best in the world to see what they're doing and what the impact is in order to understand what's actually happening. If you look at the global space, then you can come back to Main Street and equivalent to our advertisers. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, no, it does mm-hmm. make a lot of sense.
Okay. Anything else, any other anecdotal points, Jed, related to this? I mean, I know that we talked about in our prep that it goes like this. For those of you that are thinking about where we are economically, I actually want, and we want you to come off this call and think about the opportunity, the sheer opportunity you're sitting on top of, because during downturns in economic times, the strongest and the best excel and achieve and go forward. So when you're thinking about magazines you compete with, direct mail, other newspapers, other choices, other media and advertising, think about this opportunity as whatever the downturn is, that you will have competitors close their door. Not a week goes by that we don't have our clients that we're coaching that they're either maintaining or progressing and eating market share, but that we don't have the news that one of their competitors has closed, is no longer doing business, has changed their frequency, has shifted their distribution, all of those things. The strong get stronger. All right? And so if you want to continue to compete very aggressively in your marketplace, please know that that's an approach that we want you to take as a result from this call and conversation. Jed, anything else to add to that before we talk about our second point?
Yeah, no, I think you're right on, and I think that it's very easy to sort of lose track and with all of the bad news that you hear, from print publications in general, whether, as you mentioned, whether it's layoffs or cutbacks or close downs, print works. You don't lose sight of that. For many advertisers, it's still the best medium out there. The challenge is proving it. And this is sort of a recurring theme in every call. But the challenge is just showing customers how well it works. But if you can do that, it really does work. Work well for, as you know, I'm probably preaching to the choir, but as many of you know.
Absolutely. So, point well taken. Jed, let's move to our second point here, because we're going to talk about sales strategies for success. For those of you that have joined our calls over the years, and please know at MediaBids, the calls are there. They've been archived. The team at MediaBids does a wonderful job posting them. We bring them in later this afternoon, and then they're up on the website within the next day or so. There's a whole host of calls, and we haven't covered anything, Jed, twice. I'm real proud of that. We've covered a lot of ground. It gives all of you a sense that over 3 years, we probably have 30-plus calls that are archived there, that there's no redundancy, okay? But there are key points here. The sales strategy for success, there are reoccurring themes. There are entire calls that, for example, you can go listen to how to build a media comparison, what goes in a media comparison, why you have to stop in your tracks. All of you heard this 30 days ago. If you don't have a media comparison, if you don't know what that is, you need one built in the next 24 hours or less. In the state of our current economy, you have to dot every I and cross every T. There is no opportunity to misstep. So when we talk about sales strategies, a media comparison is an absolute. Number two, you have to absolutely be training your team well, really well, okay? And that does not mean just in a classroom. That means that you need to be doing field coaching, getting out in the field. You need to be doing phone coaching, meaning you're joining your salespeople by three-way call. And you need to be doing email coaching. And we talked about that two calls ago, and we did a full program all about sales success and sales coaching. So there are about a 60-minute program that you can go listen to that. The point is that this field coaching, it comes in three varieties, and you have to fire off on all of it. Every email that comes in and goes out from a new hire needs your insight and coaching and should come into you and also go to that individual. How they respond, how you respond, gives you an opportunity to coach them and let them watch you to respond to 20 or 30 or 40. Let you watch them respond to 20 or 30 or 40. A very important point. You must absolutely train well. Also recognize that your media kit, your media presentation has to be rock solid. About 18 months ago, we did a call, Jed, if you remember, and I think we looked at somewhere around 200 media kits that participants submitted in, and we went through them. And then we actually pulled out some case studies. Remember that, Jed? We looked at maybe six or eight of them?
Yep.
Okay. So your media kits have got to be rock solid. You have to know who your competitors are and how they're presenting their media kit as well. And that's the whole piece about knowing who you're competing against and what their strengths and weaknesses are. And I'm going to tell all of you, Jed and I have seen thousands and thousands of media kits over our 40-plus years in and around the biz. And please know that there is great and there is poor, and the gap is as big as the Grand Canyon. Jed, you want to comment on that? I know your experience related to media kits and selling and sales
programs. Yeah, I mean, media kits are one of the things that, gives me bad dreams. I think there are lots of mistakes that publications make with media kits. I mean, some are fantastic. But, I think, as you mentioned, it's not only writing a media kit that with your competition in mind, but it's also writing a media kit with your reader in mind. Realizing that your customer needs to be able to actually read this and understand what the heck you're talking about. I think that sometimes publications lose sight of the fact that, the people who are reading it don't have 2 hours to digest it all.
Absolutely. I mean, my gosh, Jed, this is earnest. I've been in media presentations where I literally took off my watch and said, I asked for 10 minutes, and that's all that I want. I put the watch on the desk or the conference room table and said, I want 10 minutes. And at 10 minutes, if you're done, I'm done. Okay, truly. And if you want to give me 10 more minutes with your permission, that's cool. Otherwise, I'm done. Boom, I'm out. So when you pause and think through that, you got to get crisp. You got to say, look, here are the three things that I bring that are exceptional. Here are the three things that I know you're in one other print publication that I know we do superior. And here are three things that I'm superior to the other publication. You're, in fact, in two. You're not in mine. And I only need 10 minutes to articulate it. And I would encourage all of you to role play that. Sales managers that are on this call, I know we have lots of those. Owners, publishers that are on this call, the CEOs of your company, presidents we have on this call, challenge your team. Get in there and role play with them. Roll up your sleeves and go do this. And I'm going to tell all of you that the best can role play. And if you can't role play, then you can't deliver it out in the outside world. You've got to be able to do it in that kind of environment.
Right. And to kind of bring it back to our first point, I mean, you know, one of the things that's happening is that as companies' budgets become tighter, they tend to reevaluate things. And, you know, now's a good time to, you know, if there's an advertiser that you need to get a media kit in front of that you haven't or they haven't had one recently, I mean, now's a good time to revamp it because you know, these people are getting pressure, you know, to deliver more results, to take a look at where they're spending, you know, spending their marketing dollars and to try to get the largest, you know, ROI that they possibly can.
Absolutely, not even a question. And so for all of you who are listening to us talk about this, the second point of seven today, these sales strategies for success, recognize that we're going to talk about some other categories here that are about expenses and trimming expenses and making choices and decisions, but you cannot shave your expenses to profitability. So let me again clarify that, okay? You cannot shave your expenses to profitability. You have got to drive your biz, and this point number two really hits home. You have got to drive it with your selling and sales strategies. You've got to go eat directly from your competitors. You know, the neatest part about publishing, Jed, which we all know, is guess what? Every time you put out a publication, it's a report card on how you did. Did you grow or not? Did you stay the same? Who'd you gain? Who'd you lose? You know,
right.
We talked about over the years, if you and I were in the copier business, I could sell 500 copiers within two blocks of where you're standing this moment. You would never know I was there. I'd be like a thief in the night, right?
Right.
But if I come in your neighborhood and I go sell 500 ads and you pick up my next magazine, you know I've done good.
Right.
You know I took down 500 ads. Or, conversely, if I lost 500, guess who's the first to know? Guess who cares the most? You do, right?
Right, absolutely.
You care the most, okay? The beautiful part about publishing, I've been in publishing since the mid-'80s, and I've never forgotten that I get to keep score. I can remember having bookshelves, Jed, where I've every issue, like a newborn baby, every issue is like going to the library. There is June of 1989, and there is July, and then, oops, August is out of place. Let me get that back in. You know, you just feel like a proud papa, a proud mama, you know, looking at, you know, the jewel of your work. In turn, I remember entire bookshelves keeping track of my competitors.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, sales success. Couple more points, okay, on point number two. You positively, absolutely have to have your phone tracking and your web tracking in place. With the advent of Google and their incredible success, if you've admired their company, you've wondered why they do so well, if you bought their stock and you've seen how they've done over the last 3, 4, 5 years, maybe not in the last 3 minutes or 3 weeks, I knew you had to get a chuckle from that. But the point is they've done it because everything they do, they can validate every click, they can validate every phone call. They looked at the best of publishing and started from scratch, and they got it right. And if you're not able to track the phone leads coming inbound to your advertisers, you're losing. And if I'm competing with you and I have my phone tracking in place, I'm going to eat your lunch today, tomorrow, and forever. I'm going to close you out, I'm telling you. Conversely, if you're working with phone tracking on the other side, then you can sit down with advertisers and show them trends by the category, trends by the region, trends for the month, the quarter, the same quarter last year. Sure, business might be off 10%, but it didn't go off 90%.
Right.
Okay. Phone tracking allows it, and your web tracking as well. You have to have that in place in regards to your approach. The bottom line, and point number two, is that you've got to know what your USP is, and you've got to be able to prove it.
Right.
Your USP, right?
Unique selling proposition, right?
Unique selling proposition, unique sales proposal, your USP. You got to get it right. And you've got to be able to articulate it on the back of a business card. You've got to be able to sell it in 10 minutes or less. You have to be able to role play it, and you have to be able to prove it with a media comparison, phone tracking, web tracking. We are in the prove it business. It was not always this way. If you're out there listening today, and many of you may be, and you're thinking about how you go out and handle a renewal, how you go out and take out, how you handle a sale, and if you've been doing it the same way you've been doing it since Grandma Gertie did it 40 years ago, you're in a rough place, in a rough economy, and you are not going to continue to succeed. I know, and we know those are strong words, but we have to be twice as strong so that even if you only hear half of what we're saying, you get it, and you have to have these strategies in place. Okay? Point number three. Now, we are going to shift gears and talk a little bit about expenses here. We're going to talk about print, production, distribution, circulation, and then we're going to move back to the website, and we'll wrap up with a little bit related to collections and the money side of the house. So we got a lot to cover here. Jed, point number three, print expenses. What do we want to say about print expenses and what some of the options are that we're seeing publishers choose at this moment in time?
Well, you know, we're seeing many publications, you know, change their sizing in an effort to, you know, to maximize their printing expenses. You know, the most famous example is, you know, you've probably noticed Rolling Stone has changed their, you know, sort of unique magazine size within the last 2 months or so in an effort to cut costs. You know, these are changes which, you know, can result in big savings. You know, and they can also result in sort of a repackaging of the product, which in some cases helps get people's attention.
Absolutely. So one of the things, a small shift, what you just heard from Jed, is that a small shift in trim size, very small. And we've had some clients, Jed, that are 3/4 of an inch, you know, or even an inch top and bottom. It doesn't change at all. I can tell you, Jed, that I've been getting sort of the tabloid size. You kind of fold them in, you know, they're pretty large and you read them. And they went to a, you know, 8.5 by 11, more traditional, or even smaller. I don't care as a reader. Rolling Stones has made a shift. I mean, there's a half dozen magazines on the newsstand that have made shifts. It's not a big deal. It's the quality of the content between the staples or between the glue in a perfect bound publication. I don't care. Even newspapers, I've seen my own newspapers, Jed, has changed. I don't care. It's the quality of the information. It's not the size of the publication that matters. For years and years, my gosh, what was one of the big mainstays? Reader's Digest was pocket size.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, TV Guide, you know, was pocket size. And they did fantastic, some of the biggest sellers ever. So make no mistake, for those of you that from a strategic ownership leadership perspective, that to trim a trim size, it makes little to no impact. For those of you on this call that have worked with me and we worked on this strategy over the last 3 and 6 months, you know that we've had a letter approach that maps out what the shift is, no big deal. You know that we built a second letter for a few that came back a little more crisp and a little fuller and a little stronger about why we made the change. But for those of you that are on this call or for those of you that have worked with me, you know, over the last 5 and 10 years, know that as we made this shift, you also put to your bottom line $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, some of you more than $1 million with some small shifts that you took to the bottom line in light of this. So think about it. It's part of the strategy given the marketplace, and there's little to no pushback and little to none as far as lost advertisers. Zero. Zip. Okay? It's not a high-risk strategy. Also, Jed touched on paper stock. That's another place to look. Although, Jed, I don't know if you've been following that, you know, in light of the reduction in oil, that paper prices have actually come down. Have you seen that?
Right. Yeah, I have.
Yep. And we'll continue to see that because oil and paper and ink, you know, all go sort of hand in hand. Also look at, and we'll talk some more about this in circulation, look at your print run. This is an opportunity to say, gosh darn it, you know, we've always covered 8 counties. Gosh, we've always covered 4 states. Or, wow, you know, we're paid publication, and you know, but we don't do much in this zip code. Let's remove that, or let's think about what we're doing. This is a strategic time. It's actually been going on for my clients for almost 6 months. We are actually constantly pruning and looking at distribution and circulation, but we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. Also recognize that there is a very intense opportunity to be getting competitive bids. All right, so as we're working with our publishing clients, we actually go out to competitive bid at least twice a year. At least twice a year. Now, for some that are on this, that are listening to this going, wow, that's pretty aggressive, or, gee, Ernest, isn't that disruptive? Actually, what's more disruptive is to not be going out for bid. okay? And we have wonderful examples where we have clients that have saved in the hundreds of thousands of dollars and in some cases into the seven figures on this side by going out and rebidding. We passionately encourage you to do it. In the state of this economy, you absolutely want to be looking at that. Also recognize there's always the decision about black and white versus color. Only in some options is that an option, the advancement of printing technology and printing presses and so forth. It used to be a much bigger deal, Jed,
right,
between the two, but nowadays it's really not that big a deal, but it's worth at least looking at. We've had a couple of clients that were full color that we've moved back to partial color. We've had some that are, black and white that we've actually changed the stock of certain pages, some that's higher and some that's lower in the middle in the body. So we've actually made some of those changes as well. And then also look at your binding options. For those of you that are on the print side, Perfect Bound costs more than saddle stitch, and if you're really right on the verge by reverting back to a saddle stitch, could actually create some nice savings. We've actually seen some examples on the other side, though, where being Perfect Bound on a publication side actually can save some money given the technology that's available. So there's no right or wrong answer related to any of these points on printing expenses. It's more what's right for your newspaper, your magazine, your publication, and your approach. Jed, a thought or comment related to this, and then I'm going to pause and see if we have any questions that have come in as well.
I think people we talk to, we're hearing of more publications sort of going further afield, printing, used to be, because of how things needed to be delivered that, you needed to print in the same town or the same county. Now with you can, PDF issues directly to the printer, you can print a state or two away, and still get the printed product back in time. So I think that, the increased competition because of the greater range has certainly opened up some opportunities. So I think that, it's one of those things. I mean, the printing industry seems to be one of those weird industries that doesn't necessarily reward their most loyal customers as much as they do new customers. So I'm not sure that you get a whole lot of benefit by remaining a loyal and faithful customer as opposed to doing what Ernest suggested, and that is being, getting quotes a couple times a year and letting them know that you're looking around.
Absolutely. We're in challenging times, and in challenging times has to come creative solutions. So very, very good point. I just want to pause. Dean, thank you so much for the email, and also Rebecca, related to the article on advertising in recessionary times, and yes, we'll positively send that as a follow-up. Please know for all of you, we'll include your questions over the balance of our call here. Send them in to Ernest@powerhour.com or just hit reply to the invitation that got you here. Please also recognize at the top of the hour, a little more informally, we'll field your questions as well, but we'd love to insert some as we're rolling right along here, okay? Let's shift gears, Jed. We have four additional points that we want to talk about. Let's talk about choices and options for production expenses, okay? So one of the things that we've seen is that there is no doubt there has been some right sizing of teams on the production size, and in the simplest term, if a publication goes back a third or goes back a fourth or gets reduced by 10%, then the workflow also got reduced. If you're running 5,000 ads through and now you're only running 4,500, guess what? There's just less work to be done, and you really need to take a look at that. I know that is not easy, but that's one option. Also, our publishing clients are doing more outsourcing, reaching out to outside 1099 or contract providers. There's no taxes on that, and there are no benefits on that side. I know it is not the ideal. Actually, there are more going from that have left publishing companies to form their own outsourcing on the outside, okay? And believe it or not, those that are on the outside, instead of having just one company to rely upon, they might be serving 10 companies, 10 publications, or 10 print and production organizations, and actually they're pretty happy on the outside. So kind of an interesting piece. We're seeing a lot of trends related to that. Once again, think about reducing the services or profit centers. So, for example, we have clients that have also extended, they build websites for their advertisers. They're like an ad agency. They produce business cards, sales flyers, marketing materials, brochures. be certain that those ancillary divisions are still making money. If you took a standalone P&L, profit and loss, financial statement, and looked at each of those areas, be certain that they're still making money. The reason you got into those added services or profit centers 5 or 10 years ago may have changed, and there may not be as much profitability in those areas, and that's another piece. And no doubt, you want to review your technology. One of the things that continues to change and shift is technology, which means more leverage. We can work smarter, do more, work with less people, and be able to accomplish the same goals. I was speaking to one of my clients who made an acquisition in Mexico, and as a result of their technology, the team in Mexico was a team of 40. There's only 3 still there. They didn't need the other 37. 37 of 40 are no longer there because their technology for the way that they handle all of their production was so much more advanced than the group in Mexico. So just a quick example on that. Chad, any comments related to production and things that you've seen along the way?
No, you know, it's one of these fields where, you know, that's just, you know, expanding rapidly. I mean, I think the time will come in the very near future where and you see some publications starting to do this where advertisers will actually be able to sort of create their own ads on the fly, you know, via a website. We see more publications in an effort to just try to bring down their costs, you know, giving a small discount for a camera-ready ad or really pushing us to provide a camera-ready ad, whereas in the past they may have been sort of jumped at the opportunity to make it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these things add up. You know, I don't think it's sort of a game of inches.
It really is. And you know, Jed, it's interesting. This is Ernest in response to that. Publishing has always had pretty nice margins, at least double digits, pretty profitable for the most part. But in a downturn in an economy where you might lose 10 or 15 or 20% of your biz, you've got to sharpen your pencil. You've got to look at your publishing business, maybe in a way that you've never looked at it in your lifetime. I know for a fact some of you that, and we had just hundreds of people that were registering for this call, but some of you that I know real well and have known over the last 13 years, have been in the business for a long time, 20, 30, 40 years, at least a couple of people that have registered here, Jed, and you've probably never seen in the last 20 or 30 or 40 years anything that looks like right now, depending on the sector you're in, depending on the sector. Some sectors actually will do this year very comparable or actually better than last year and are doing very well, especially those in the kind of oil and gas and energy sector are doing very well. Those that are in directly the real estate or the new home builder, holy smokes, you couldn't be more in the eye of the bullseye, okay? And then the rest of you kind of fall, you know, in the middle of that, okay? And even if there's a downturn, you know, if you put the strategies in place that Jed and I are talking to you about, you will succeed from that perspective. Juanita, thank you so much. I saw your note about a media comparison. For any of you that would like to see a sample media comparison, just ping a note to the reply, and we will send that out. I will not send that out to all of you, just to those. And I know many of you have it, plus it is an attached file. And if we send it out one by one, it's a lot easier, and it goes through any spam filters, okay? But you need that in place in the next 24 hours or less, period. And, Bob, thanks for your note about the article. Yes, I will send that to everybody, and I'll just include that in the body. Jed, let's shift gears. Point number 5, we promised to talk about navigating distribution and circulation options. Where do we want to begin this point?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, it's as we mentioned before, I mean, it's just sort of a matter of taking a look at what you think is working. You know, we're seeing more and more publications getting away from direct mail or in some cases, you know, if they were direct mailed, let's say weekly, you know, getting to a situation where maybe once a month they direct mail to everybody and the other 3 weeks it's free distribution. You know, all of these I think are sort of individual choices, but there's clearly a movement to kind of, you know, reevaluate these things and try to come up with most cost effective. I mean, the Examiner chain, you know, recently went from, in Baltimore, for example, recently went from direct distribution free every day to only direct distribution once a week. And, you know, according to them, you know, it hasn't impacted their ad sales, you know, significantly, and I'm sure it saved them an enormous amount of money. So, you know, I think it's a matter of sort of, as you mentioned before, sort of fine-tuning what you're doing and coming up with what makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So some of the key points, Jed, as we were preparing, you know, for this under distribution and circulation, we realize that some of you are free distribution, some of you are controlled, whether that's direct mail or whether that's targeted by actually where you distribute. And then we also know some of you on the newspaper side are paid, or on the regional national publication also are paid. So we're going to give you maybe six or eight recommendations to look at on both sides of the table. Number one, for those of you that are free publications, you absolutely need to negotiate with your rack providers. If there are rack programs in grocery, convenient drugstores, those distribution programs, I actually founded those in 1985 in Central California. I had rack programs long before any of Distributech, ADC, American Media, any of those were in place, and I know that model really, really well. Those companies have legacy payments. That means that those grocery stores and those chain stores are asking for their check every single week. Those are ironclad agreements, and those rack programs and companies that run them are really having a tough time, but they're also more open to negotiating than ever before, probably in the 20-year lifetime that I've seen those rack programs. The rack programs were designed with the right intentions, and the pricing got completely out of control. The genie's way out of the bottle, and the retailers love the money that they're getting. Number two, just in general, as far as any outdoor racks, whether you're on the paid or free side, the suppliers of racks are much more open. In fact, there's a lot more rehab and previously owned racks that are available for you. Also, please know that there is distribution software today that will do wonderful things. This goes right back to our selling strategy, having your ammunition, being able to prove it. Your distribution software should be able to keep track of all that's happening in your biz, but some of the most important things are what's happening with the pickup, how much is left over, stops that have too much need to be trimmed, stops that aren't moving need to be removed. This is about managing expenses and working smartly. But conversely, your distribution software should also be driving your sales effort. On the other side, your distribution should be able to tell your sales team every location A to Z, every location by type of location, every location sorted by zip code. If your distribution is not doing that, your salespeople do not have the tools they need, period. 1988, I had a three-ring binder with those tools in my hand. When we got to the point about distribution, I pulled it out, and it was one call close. Done. Well, show me your distribution. Oh, yeah, you want to see? You want to see Bob's Cleaners? Here, it's alphabetical. You want to see your neighborhood? Good, it's by zip code. You want to see type of location because you really want to be in these kinds of locations? Here, I got it all sorted. Press hard, three copies, I want your agreement. Okay? So, and if you're not providing that for your team, then there's no way you're telling the story. You could print your publication, your newspaper, your magazine on 88-karat gold, but it doesn't matter. If you don't put it in the hands of the right person, it doesn't matter. And your distribution and your circulation story tells you exactly what your salespeople need to know and exactly what your advertisers are buying. Jed, you had also mentioned, gosh, some distribution teams for even buying bulk gas, didn't you?
Right, right. Yeah, I talked to a chain in California where they were actually able to get a discount from a gas station distributor. I mean, you know, a chain of gas stations where they could, you know, where they got their carriers' prepaid cards, and they were able to get it for, you know, I think it was 37 cents less than what they were normally paying. So, you know, those things add up.
Absolutely. Bulk gas, I thought, was very interesting. I had not heard that, but I'm very intrigued by that. I think that's awesome. So let me also add, in this economic time, our clients are pruning. We talked about this earlier. Pruning the low-profile readers, for those of you that are on the trade side or the subscriber side, they're pruning advertisers that or readers that just don't make sense geographically, where you might have expanded into another county, another state, another sector. You might have added another circulation list. All of those things, we've got to look at them more closely. I will also share with you that we have those that have been trade publications historically, and I'm seeing this on my side, Jed. I get 70, 80 magazines a month following all of the industries I stay current with, and now they're asking me to become a subscriber, and guess what? They've earned it. Okay. I'm willing to pay. That's fine. So I'm moving from, you know, being a paid trade directly sent because I fit the profile to now still being all those things, and I'm paying $12 a year. Who gives a rip? That's not going to separate me from reading the magazines I want to read, and we encourage all of you, but you've got to do it with a strategy that makes sense, and we help our clients accomplish that. Also recognize you can bid your circulation job out. There are circulation and distribution companies nationally. We know of at least a couple that we can recommend you to, that they'll take a look at what you're currently doing, and in the same way that you bid out printing and the way you bid out production, you can also bid out your distribution. And there are companies that will literally do even local distribution. So send us a note if you have any interest related to that.
You know, another yeah. Sort of trend in that arena too is that you're starting to see more competitors even at times, go in together for distribution. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that has its downside as well, but you know, in many cities, you're starting to see bitter competitors that are daily newspapers competing day in and day out. Have teamed up for distribution and mm-hmm. saving a lot of money for.
Yep, absolutely. And thank you to all of you, Eric, Jeff, Jerry, Michael, Edward, Rebecca, Hillary. We see all of your emails coming in. Thank you very much. And some of the questions here, I'm going to tuck in one or two just real laser, Jed. One is asking about, is this the time to be starting a magazine in this economy? In my opinion, I would be certain to stick to my knitting. I would get what I've got going on and get it going good. How many gets was that? Get it going good. Let me clean that up a little bit. What I mean by that is, stick to your guns. Stick to what you've got going on. In my opinion, the first quarter, second quarter, this is not the time for a launch unless it was absolutely sterling, absolutely strategic, and it made sense for a lot of reasons. And, frankly, I'd like to know what those reasons were. So, take 15 minutes, draft me your proposal, and I'll give you a thumbs up or get you on the calendar, and we'll talk for 15 minutes. Rebecca wrote a note. What about moving a free paper from total saturation mailing to carrier delivery? Rebecca, it's worthy of looking at the side-by-side, look at the return on investment. Query, you've got to query your largest advertisers to see what their pulse on that is. And then, of course, you've got to look side-by-side, at the pricing and if that makes sense. Okay? So, Rebecca, thank you so much for your question, and I'm going to just see, was there anything else? Maybe one more from Erica. Please send info on bidding. Yep, we'll do that, Erica, and give you some options on distribution. Bottom line is, less is more. Get tighter with your publication. Get tighter with your audience. Also, even think about piggyback distribution. This is really key. If you're a publication that does automotive and you know in your market that there's also a publication that does homes and another one that does real estate, get together with those publications and go piggyback distribution. Rather than each having your own distribution team, consolidate the three of you and have one person deliver three publications. We are doing more and more of this joint venture work, and it's really, really great. I've run distribution teams. I've had more than 4,000 locations that I manage day in, day out on the west coast of California. I really understand it, and there are wonderful alliances that really make sense. We've got some stock alliance agreements that you can use to string together a couple of publications. We have one marketplace, Jed, where 10 publications, we help bring them together. And this goes back, 10 years ago in the southeast, and they're still together. And I think some of those people are actually on this call where we show them how to come together and they form an actual organization they need every month, and it's been absolutely fantastic, okay?
Last thing I just want to kind of tie this into some of the other things we talked about was, tracking the results of the advertisers who are currently using you is not only tracking the results that they're receiving, but it's tracking the results you're receiving. It also can educate you on on potential distribution decisions, because you may find that there are portions of your distribution area that are responding markedly better than others from a consumer response perspective. So it's a way to also gauge the readership.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I completely agree with you on that, and it gives them an opportunity to really understand what those responses look like.
Right.
Jed, we have two additional points before the top of the hour. Again, thank you to all of you for sending your questions in. We can see them rolling in. It's sort of filling our inboxes here, is there? But that's cool. Send us your questions. We'll tuck them in here as best we can. Top of the hour, we'll open up the call, and very informally we'll field some of your additional questions. Two additional points. We're going to talk about the website and its role in driving new revenue, and then we're going to wrap up and just talk about some of the ABCs of collections. We feel and felt like it's an important topic, and there's enough questions out there related to it. The most important piece to recognize with your website, point number six, is you have got to monetize your website. Okay? And what that means is that you've got to both, and for some of you are going, ho-hum, Ernest, been there, done that. That's cool. High five, great, you're fantastic. Many of you, or most of you, if it's not in place, you have got to be selling electronic advertising. Your advertisers are expecting it, and if you don't, and if you only stick to a print strategy, you are going to be decimated by your competitors that are doing it both. And there's really three parts to this, okay? Three pieces, and you've got to get all the pieces right. And we did an entire call related to this about 2 years ago, and everything still stands. And you've got to have your print. You've got to have your website monetized, meaning I can buy advertising on it, and you can show me my results every 30 days. And then you absolutely, positively need an e-newsletter that goes out at least once a month to your readers, to your subscribers, positively. For those of you that are the owners and presidents and CEOs of your company, I'm going to say these words, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart and as strong as I can possibly say it. When you go to sell your company, in your left hand you're going to bring your financials to the table. How do I know this? Because we help clients buy and sell publications. You're going to bring your financials in the left hand, and you're going to bring your subscriber list of the readers to your e-newsletter in your right hand. And, Jed, I know you've heard me say this before, and of the two, which will be most valuable?
Probably the right hand, right?
Yeah. You better believe it. The readers.
Right.
Why? Because the readers says to a buyer that you have a model and a methodology to reach directly out to 50,000 readers of an e-newsletter that costs you pennies to go out to, that convert those newsletter readers into web readers, which converts into web results, and you're making money on that. You're making money for the advertising at the website. You're making money for the advertising in the newsletter, and you have the ability to ping 50,000 people or 5,000 or 250,000. You guys all fill in your own number, okay? But going to go to the other side, for those of you that know economically what it costs, even at a $1, simple $1 or $2 per reader, that 50,000 to reach them in your magazine costs 50 to 100 grand. And buyers know that. So you have to put in all three parts to this strategy. If you're not doing it, it is part of the success formula. And frankly, this strategy, if you're hearing it for the first time today and you've never been to one of our calls, this strategy has been rolling along for more than 5 years. And if you have competitors who are doing it and you're wondering why they're growing and you're not, it's in part because of this strategy. Okay? So your website and this role in driving revenue is absolutely key. I will tell you that whenever I begin working with a new publishing company, where the first things I say is, show me your website, show me what you're doing, show me your newsletter. If not, we'll go work on those things. And then the very next thing, right out of my mouth, Jed goes, okay, now, show me your competitors. Let me go surf. Let me go subscribe to their newsletter. Let me go request one of their publications or newspapers. I go right at to go see it where their competitors are, because I'm looking to see if they've got all these models in place. Okay? Let's see. Jed, anything else you want to share related to websites and driving revenue that I did not include here?
No, I mean, I think there's a lot to it, right? And we can talk about it for a long time, but I think as you portrayed, it's really something which can strengthen your print product and make it all the more valuable. It's certainly a great way to reach readers and keep in touch with them. And it's also a good way to see many publications that also do a separate one for advertisers, keeping advertisers in touch with what's going on.
That's a given, Jed. I mean, the separate newsletter that goes out to advertisers and the separate one that goes to prospects is an absolute given. But the one that goes out, and some are doing that pretty well, but the one that goes out to the readers of the publication, that's the golden ticket. That's
right.
The e-ticket.
Right.
Okay? So the bottom line is that your website, your e-newsletter will help drive revenue and will now funnel the success back to your print publication. So now at the end of a month, you can sit down and say, so Mr. Advertiser or Mrs. Advertiser, here was our e-newsletter that went out to blank readers. Here were the number of clicks on your ad, specific. Here was your website, and at your website, here were the actual clicks and results specifically on your ad. And here is the print publication. Here is the phone tracking that we can directly show you how they all link together. Let me show you for the month of September, October of last year. Let me show you how it also compares to those by geography or within your sector. And be able to show those kinds of results and those kinds of numbers, that's where you want to be selling from.
Right. It's hard to say no to that.
Are you kidding? How do you say no? Or conversely, when I lay all of that out for you, Jed, and say, look, I'm asking for another year commitment and I want another $26,000, and they say, well, gee, I was also, you know, meeting with, you know, competitor X in 2 hours and competitor Y in 4 hours, and I say, great, can any of them show you this? And they say, frankly, Ernest, they can't. Good. Press hard. 3 copies. I want to do it. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Press hard. 3 copies. Holy smokes. I remember those lines. I remember saying those lines. Okay. Let's talk about collections. We're going to finish up with collections because, and we specifically put it here at the end of the call. It sounds so basic, but we're hearing some real concerns about collection policies, collection trends, collection procedures. 1988, I walked into a training class. Jed, I was in Georgia. For some of you that are on this call that know me from those early years, actually you probably were sitting in those training programs. The woman by the name of Charlie who comes rolling in, Charlie ran the collections department, and she said these words, an ad is not an ad until an ad is paid for. An ad is not an ad that's been sold until an ad's been paid for, and I've never forgotten those words. You can sell until the cows come home. Jed, you and I can go sell 500 pages today. But if we don't get paid for them, there's nothing to sell. Okay? So we're encouraging all of you to stay very, very close to your collection strategies. Please know, very large companies begin writing off collections after as quick as 45 days. So if a payment was due on November 1st, by December 15th, they've already written off a portion. That doesn't mean they're not going to collect on it. It means that they already know that a portion of that money out 45 days already is at risk. You cannot afford that. You have to sell collections right up front in your sales presentation. You have to confirm where that first invoice is going. Somebody on your team has to call that person when that first invoice hits to ask, did it go to the right person? Was it in the right format? And when and how will that be paid? And that has to be communicated back to the salesperson and has to be logged in a collection manual, whether that's a manual, three-ring binder, bone simple, or electronic, does not matter. The point is it has to be recorded so that we can begin to follow up from there. The other piece to recognize is that if your invoice is due upon receipt, the collection call gets made the very next day. That starts the process. And you have to be very consistent. By the time anything gets out beyond 30 days, if your team is handling it internally, then your sales team has got to get involved because in the end, they're tied to that, which is a quick comment about compensation. There should not be any compensation paid at a publishing company that is not directly tied to the salespeople getting paid as and when the client pays. That might be old hat for most of you or many of you, but for those who it's not, there is no other way to pay advertising sales professionals. You want them positively in the game and focused on not just selling ads, but also focused on getting paid. Okay? Jed, comments or observations? We've just heard, a lot of concern, a lot of sometimes fear, a lot of questions related to collections. Any comments from your perspective and your experience?
Well, you know, as a guy at a company that gets a couple hundred invoices a week, take a look at your invoices and make sure that they're as clear as they can be. It's sometimes surprising how often there are discrepancies. Mm-hmm. And we do it electronically, so it's harder for that to come up than it is in a sort of a conventional way. I mean, it seems that the transfer of information in some organizations between a salesperson and the billing department is uh, is an inexact science. So not that changes, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, the reason why I bring that up at this point is only because, you know, those types of discrepancies just push your time out further.
Absolutely. No doubt you've got to be crisp from that perspective. Jed, I want to tuck in two questions. One, and I'm not going to name the individual because the question really says, it's coming from an account executive, and it says, how do I get my publisher to actually implement the things you are suggesting in this program? Okay? And I'm going to say in response, without naming this person's name, but to all of you that are thinking the same, because we know we've got owners, presidents, CEOs, sales managers, and sales reps on this call. We have a whole cross-section, as always, Jed. My words of encouragement are, number one, have them go listen to the call. Today is Wednesday. It'll be up either before the end of today, tomorrow, or Friday. Have them go listen to it. Ping them over that and send it to them. Number two, send them over. Send an email. Send an email to your publisher, to your owner, to your president, and copy me in, ernest@powerhour.com. Ping a note that says, Ernest, that was a fantastic program. Gary, I'm sending you a quick note because the things that I heard from Ernest were really strong, and I would love him to follow up with us. And then just step aside from there. My team will scoop that up. We get about 500 to 700 emails a day. They'll scoop that up. They'll thank you directly, and they'll say to Gary, your president or your owner, Gary, that's great. Let's get on the calendar, and let's talk. Oh, by the way, before we do, go listen to this program. We will help you move this forward. We do it all the time. We've got people within organizations that go, I'm not getting what I need. I'm telling all of you, if you don't get what you need, you are going to have one rough 09. It has never been more important to dot your I's and cross your T's and get it right. Let me finish, field one more question. Tony sent us a note. He says, how does one develop a distribution list for e-newsletters for a free publication? Fabulous, Tony. And the answer is simple. It's easy, and you need to do it. You use your publication to embed in your fill pages that talk about your e-newsletter, and you have to give your readers the readers of your print publication a compelling reason. What are you going to give me? What's in it for me to read that fill page that says there's something at your website that I got to have, and you got to fill that in. You have to answer that, and that's what goes in your advertising. Every time someone comes to your website, you have to do the same thing. Okay? And then once you start to send out your newsletter, you also want to make it very attractive and easy for those people who get it to forward it on to others. How many times do we get an email and go, gosh, it's a great idea. Let me send it to my two brothers or my three sisters or my mom or my dad or my business colleague, okay? You need to make it easy and attractive that people can forward your information. All of you have different hot spots or hot points or something that's compelling. You've got to think through that in the what's in it for me. All right, and that's how you create your e-newsletter. Tony, that's an excellent question. One of the best I've seen over the years related to that, so that's tremendous.
And there's some great software available, by the way, for managing those lists that make it very easy, or at least as easy as it can be, to make sure you're not sending out duplicates and take people off of unsubscribe, that kind of stuff. We use a company called Constant Contact, which is it's cheap. It's, you know, under $100 a month, type of thing. But there are others out there too that are probably just as good, if not better. And so, you know, that for a long time that was always kind of the burden of those types of lists.
Absolutely. Jed, the point is it could all be fully automated. It's gotten very cost efficient, and I would rather invest $50 or $100 a month in an e-newsletter piece of software. There's all kinds of choices than $50 or $100,000 to go get out $50 or $100,000 to my readers. Let's pause here. We're right at the top of the hour. To all of you, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been a wonderful journey. This completes our third full year. We will not be back until January. If you have any specific topics you would like us to cover, please again send an email back, Ernest Power Hour. We'll go ahead and we will send that, and we will include that. Jed and I are always planning about a month in advance for our calls, so we will meet in December planning for January. Please also know MediaBiz does a wonderful job serving publications and publishers. They will help you drive more revenue. You need to learn more about MediaBiz. They're an important part of the equation. Jed, we're at the top of the hour. I'm going to conclude the recording portion. Then I'm going to come back and talk to the group about how we're going to open the lines, okay?
Great.
All right, give me just a second.